Hello, and welcome to a festive edition of the East Anglian Theatre Podcast. Season's greetings to one and all. So, I'll confess I opened the episode with a lie. This isn't a festive edition, it just happens to be around Christmas, and I panicked when I started to record this bit. Now, it seems Father Christmas has gifted me a heavy cold this year, and with it a sexy voice. So apologies if you have to go and cool off after listening to me in this episode. Rest assured, I am still utterly repulsive in person, though. But what kind of intro is that? Welcome everyone, my name is Ray Tempesta, and I am your host. If this was a Christmas dinner, the podcast would be the table, and I would be the annoying guy hovering nearby those doing productive stuff, desperately trying to take credit for other people's hard work. If you've not tuned in before, well, where the bloody hell have you been? We're 50-odd episodes deep, so you've got a bit of catching up to do. Never mind, you're here now, that's all that counts. Pull up a chair, grab a cracker, stick on your party hat, let's begin. There's three distinct parts to each episode. The first is the starters, where I whet your appetites by taking you through a bit about what I've been up to in the world of theatre. The second is the main course, where I talk turkey to a guest about their current production, and we polish off our meal with a handful of shout-outs for upcoming productions in the East Anglian region. That's all coming up, of course, but first, listen as I plug the social media accounts of the podcast that you're already supporting by listening to. The East Anglian Theatre Podcast has a Facebook, Instagram, X and TikTok presence. Do consider giving the pages a like, a follow, a share or whatever. I'm not particularly prolific on social media, so I can guarantee your feed won't be clogged up by my crap. There's also a website, eatpod.co.uk. That's eatpod.co.uk. Here you'll find all episodes of the podcast, plus the reviews that I produce, the occasional written interview, and a page to contact me if you want to be featured in an episode, or if you want to critique the critic, perhaps. Up to you. Anyway, let's move on to section one, and sitting here all alone at Christmas, I asked myself the question, Ray, what have you been up to in the world of theatre lately? Well, panto season is in full swing. I've seen four of them so far, and reviewed three. I think I might have mentioned Snow White by Theatre Royal of Bury St Edmunds in the last episode, and I've now also seen Sleeping Beauty, A Fairy's Tale at Norwich Theatre Royal, plus two versions of Cinderella, one at Sheringham Little Theatre and the other at the Fisher Theatre in Bungay. Now, I haven't written a review for the Sheringham one because, to be honest, I didn't enjoy it, and I thought for a professional production it was quite poor. I much prefer to be pro-something rather than anti, so if I feel a review is going to be more negative than positive, I just won't write one. By contrast, I had so much positive feedback about the Red Duck Productions version of Cinderella in Bungay. Now, it's a fairly sizeable stage at the Fisher Theatre, but it was incredible how just six actors managed to make the stage feel full pretty much all of the time. But it wasn't just the strength of personality or performance that made the panto stand out. It was also the quality of the script, which was quick-fire and heavily loaded with jokes and puns, well worth going to see, not only to support Red Duck as a small company, but also to support the beautiful Fisher Theatre itself, which is in need of financial support. Perhaps not so desperate for your financial support, but still a lovely venue to visit, is Norwich Theatre Royal, and their panto is well worth a look too. It's a very non-traditional take on Sleeping Beauty, and the show is produced more in musical theatre style than perhaps a traditional panto, although that's maybe unsurprising given the calibre of the cast they have on board, with Carl Queensborough, fresh from playing Hamilton on the West End, and Millie O'Connell, who was one of the original cast of Six. You can read my full reviews of each show on my website, eatpod.co.uk. There's also a written interview with actor Simon Michael Morgan about the panto that he's featuring in, Dick Whittington, at Galston Pavilion Theatre. Anyway, enough about me. What about you? What have you seen this season? Anything left an impression on you? Do let me know. I'm always happy to hear from you. Right, okay, let's move on to section two, the interview. And this time, I'd like to introduce someone who's written a pantomime for a small company based close to the Norfolk Broads, which will be performed in January to help wash away those blues. His name is Scott Meacock, and he's written The Little Mermaid as a pantomime for Horning Amateur Theatrical Society, and he's also directing the show. So, without further ado, which is a shame because I do so enjoy an ado, let's have a chat with Scott, shall we?
Hi
Hi there, Scott. It's lovely to chat with you. Now, I guess as we're carrying out this interview just a few days before Christmas, I'm obliged to ask, are you looking forward to it?
I am. I love the lights at Christmas time. I'm a lighting guy. I love lights. Christmas itself, the presents and all that, it's nice. It's all right. But, I'm not a huge fan. I like the time off work. Don't like the business of it all and, traveling here, there and everywhere to see everyone. But, I don't want to be a Grinch about these things because it is a good time of year. It is.
Yeah, and you've obviously got rehearsals for your pantomime going on at the moment. So presumably you allow the cast and crew a nice bit of time off over Christmas?
Yes, they've got a real nice time off. They've got two weeks off. So we had our last rehearsal Sunday just gone. Mm-hmm. And we sort of finished off with some nice mince pies and mulled wine. And said happy Christmas to each other. And off we've gone for 2 weeks, nice. Which means it's a real knuckle down time when we come to January, because we've got just a couple of weekends and then the curtain comes up. So,
So what about you? Is the writing part is already taken care of now, but as a director of the show, are you able to switch off during this sort of 2 week break?
No, definitely not. No, I'm mulling over bits and bobs and sort of thinking, what can we tweak here? What can we do there just to sharpen things up a little bit? And so now I can't, I've been living with the pantomime now. Well, when the curtain goes up, I've been living with the pantomime, as it were, for around about a year. So it's been playing on my mind and going through my mind for a year. And I'm just super excited to sort of get the audience reaction, because it was a real booster when I was able to put it in front of the committee and they read it out loud. And sort of to hear them sort of chuckling away at bits and bobs and certain bits that I didn't think were that funny. And then they're chuckling away. It's sort of a real booster for me. So, looking forward to a live audience in January. Yeah.
Obviously, this is an original script. So are you making tweaks as you go?
We haven't had to make too many, to be honest with you. It's mainly to do with the songs. We sort of tweaked a few of the words as we've been going along to the songs to make it more in keeping with the theme of the show, the pantomime, and sort of shorten them some as well to keep the songs sort of short and punchy. So that we can carry on and tell the story. So sort of text-wise, just a thing on the top of my head, I can't really sort of think of any major changes that we've done. So that's worked out well.
Yeah.
Getting gotten away with a few little naughty little bits that the adults will get and the children won't, which I'm quite surprised that I was able to keep those bits in. But it's panto. It's all good fun.
They're the best parts, aren't they, as an adult?
Yes. Yeah.
So we'll start with the company that you're working with. That's Horning Amateur Theatrical Society, or HATS for short. What can you tell us about the group?
Well, the group's been going for just a little over 40 years now, so it's a well-established group. We have all ages. The youngest member that we have is 4 years old, and we go all the way up to our oldest member. I don't know if I'm allowed to say or not, but I think it's somewhere, shall we say, sort of in the 80s. And so... So that's really good to have that sort of good mixture. Always on the lookout for, obviously, new members. But actually, we've got two families, which are three generations. I think I got that right. So we've got the grandmother, the daughter, and the granddaughter. And then another family, which is the grandmother, the daughter, and the grandson. And it nearly would have been three families with three generations, but we just missed out. We just missed out on granddad taking on a part due to other commitments. So it's really nice that we have families that are part of the group. But yes, a real good mixture.
Yeah, I have to be completely honest. I'd not come across HATS as a company before. And the only groups that I know of in that sort of catchment area, so to speak, are the likes of East Norfolk Operatic Society or Ratcliffe Players. So is the company sort of predominantly made up of people generally local to the village of Horning?
Yeah, that's right. The show's put on for the community and is made up of people within the community. I'm slightly further afield. There's a few of us are slightly further afield, but make the journey to come and be part of the group. Yeah, and you always get this sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? People that are part of other groups. So you always sort of get that nice little bit of pollination between groups and that, which is a good thing, because then obviously the groups sort of promote the other group within each show and that, and you get to hear what's going on, so it's all good.
Yeah, and you've mentioned it before, you're not actually necessarily local to Horning, but what's your association with Hat Scott? Because I mean, last time we met, you were working in Fakenham on Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, so I mean, I've been part of the group since 2007 with my wife as well. My wife does the costume side of things. I grew up in Hofton, which is the neighbouring village. Within the group, I've been on stage, off stage. I mean, the last time I wrote and directed for Hatch was about 8 years ago. So, you know, some people are saying, you know, pull your finger out, Scott. And I hope most people say it was worth the wait. So, and you know, I, in the very early days, I did do a bit of sound for them as well. We've got a great guy, Robin, now, who does the sound. So, yes, yeah, so, yeah, part of the group since 2007. So long standing. You know, as we all do, we grow up, get jobs, we go out. And, you know, times change in that. But I've always sort of, it's home. It's a family.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I love about the group. It is a family.
And on to the panto itself, The Little Mermaid. Now, I've not seen that done as a panto before, but it occurs to me, you know, it's got all the key elements of panto. You know, the Wicked Witch, Ursula, you've got the prince and princess, albeit one of them's a mermaid, a loyal friend in Flander, and the comedy character in Sebastian. So it's all the sort of the key elements are there. So presumably it translates well, and that's why you chose to write that as a panto.
I did, yeah. Now, obviously, because of Disney and you know, carefulness, it loosely follows the story of The Little Mermaid, because I mean, at the foremost, it is a panto, so you have the comedy sketches and the slapstick and what have you, which you have to have. But yeah, we've got some wonderful characters. We've got Crabulous, who's very faithful. We've got Coy, who's obviously a friend of The Little Mermaid, and also we've got Piff as well, Piff the Puffin. And like you say, we've got the evil sea witch Octavia, and underwater sea king and queen, and we've also got above land. We've got a king and a queen as well as, of course, a very handsome prince who is going to sweep the mermaid off her feet, as they do in these pantomimes. But assuming that all goes well, of course, we've got a whole horrible bit in between where all things go wrong for the good people. But you know. Fingers crossed that it turns out good for them all.
Yeah. And what do you think the audiences will enjoy most about your pantomime?
I personally, and perhaps I'm biased, but I think we've got it all. We've got a really wonderful, colourful set. The costumes are absolutely stunning as well. And, of course, we've got a good crew that are doing slick scene changes. We've got wonderful lighting, brilliant sound effects that will help tell the story. And of course, a wonderful cast that are going to help tell the tale. And yeah, it's lots of comedy. There's stuff in there for adults that children won't get. And there's just the slapstick, which children just find hilarious. So yeah. something for everyone. And like you say, it's a pantomime that's not really done. And who knows, maybe this will be the avalanche that starts more of it. I don't know.
And you dropped a hint at it earlier, having written a panto. Was it a panto you said you'd written?
Yes, Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah. So aside from Sleeping Beauty and this one, had you had much in the way of sort of past experience of script writing?
No, I hadn't. No, the one 8 years ago, Sleeping Beauty was my very first one. Okay. So really lucky that the committee sort of took a chance on me and let me write that one. And I think that put me in good stead for this one. That they were happy for me to sort of go ahead. And you know, of course, they have to read and approve things and make little tweaks here and there, which we do, which I really have improved the script. No experience before that first pantomime.
So after 8 years, or however long it was, but what was the catalyst for you deciding you wanted to write another script?
I had it rolling around in my head, and I had little bits of the story here, there, and everywhere, and so I just really, really super keen to get it out of my head and onto the page. And I think the driver as well was obviously with Disney releasing their live action Little Mermaid as well. I just kind of felt that this is a good opportunity to sort of show people that the other side of the story is as a pantomime.
Yeah. So how's it shaping up? I mean, you mentioned obviously when you come back after Christmas, you'll have little over 2 weeks until curtain up. So will it be a fraught process, do you think, to knock it into shape?
No, do you know what? We're in really good shape. I mean, you know, you get the little bits of forgetting lines and what have you, but you know, that happens. And but no, we're in really good shape. And the crew have done a really good job in looking at scene changes. We've been running the show lots and lots as well to help people go for it chronologically, so which really helps, I think, with people understanding the story and getting it straight in the head where they are, what they're doing, when they're doing it. So no, we're in good shape. First rehearsal back, we've got lights up, so we'll be setting some lights, so you know, be a proper true tech rehearsal, then running the show. And yeah, the final two will then get people into costumes, which then really gets the cast into character. Then you just kind of see the whole thing elevate as soon as you get the lights on the cast and into costume, that they really bring their characters out. So no, yeah, we are in really good shape, really, really pleased with how it's come together.
Well, that's good. And just turning attention to yourself, Scott, what's your background in theatre? You know, where did the love of it begin for you?
I really don't know. Well, and I got into sort of musical theatre when I was living out in the States, and a group of us just went out to see Les Miserables. Can't say that word properly. And you know, I just fell in love with musical theatre at that point, and I still do have a very strong love of musical theatre. Because up until that point, I mean, Mum and Dad had taken me to Theatre Royal to see pantomime. My grandparents took me over to Thursford to see Robert Wolfe play. Because I loved his music playing on the organ. And then it just sort of then, I don't know, I think I came back to the UK because my visa ran out. And I don't know, I just sort of discovered somehow the Madamarket Theatre and watched one of their shows, just happened to be in the bar chatting away. And one of the guys go, well, you know, you can volunteer at the Madamarket Theatre and you can do whatever you want kind of in the theatre, because, you know, stage manage, crew, whatever. So I did. I joined the crew, and it was Lady in the Van, and from there I just volunteered more and more, done stage management with them, got into that side of things, and yeah, and then sort of joined Hatch at the same time as well. So I was doing a lot of theatre at one point. I don't think the wife really kind of saw me much, and yeah, sort of grown from there really.
Yeah, so it occurs to me you'd sort of at times have kind of flitted about from group to group.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there were times when I was sort of doing sort of both groups, so my life was pretty much living in a theatre somewhere, volunteering wise. And I just sort of remember that I think my love for the pantomime sort of came from, although I didn't quite fit the category, the Theatre Royal let me do work experience with them for a week. And they sort of moved me around the stage to do various things for one of their pantomimes. And I was by the fly with a guy, and sort of it was a proper show, live show, what have you. My first time there, first time sort of seeing the show, because I hadn't seen any rehearsals. I mean, I just literally work experience, boom, there we go, it's a live show, watch that person over there, don't touch anything, don't break anything. And it was Prince Charming. He came dashing on, and there, Prince Charming and Prince Charming and his right-hand person. And this professional actor said, oh, I've forgotten the invitation. And there's this sort of all jokey thing. And I stood there, I thought, God, that is really unprofessional. They've, you know, this person's being paid all this money to be on stage and act, and he's forgotten the prop and that. And then the next night came along, and I was in a different area, and Prince Charming, he forgot the invitation again. And that's when I sort of twigged that actually, you know, these sort of little funny moments to sort of put in. And then I sort of started to watch pantomimes a lot closer and sort of understood them a lot better to sort of lead me to where we are today, as it were, with this love of pantomimes, and just how you can just make people laugh and let people enjoy a great night out with some real good old slapstick and a little bit of forgetfulness, I suppose.
Mm. And you mentioned, obviously, your love of pantomime. We're right in the midst of panto season at the moment. So have you got any plans to see any pantomimes at the moment, or have you indeed seen some?
Yes, I went along and saw Bristol's pantomime. They'd done Jack and the Beanstalk, and that's written by a local lady, Hannah. And I tell you what, the amount of local references she's managed to shoehorn into that pantomime is incredible. So I've seen that, and that was enjoyable. And I do want to get out and see a lot more. I want to pop over to Dereham and see Cinderella. Obviously, I've already seen Faldos's pantomime, which they've done, which is Beauty and the Beast, which has been nominated for a NODA award. I'll go into Norwich Theatre Royal to see their pantomime, Sleeping Beauty. And yeah, I want to get out and also see some other groups that I've not necessarily seen before, do sort of find I sort of get into a routine of going to the same groups. So this year I want to go out and discover some more groups.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you've now introduced me to Horning. Yeah, that'll be one I definitely want to come out and see, because I've never been out that direction really, other than Rackheath and East Norfolk. But I mean, they obviously tend to do their stuff at the Manor Market. So yeah, that'll be interesting. In terms of the stuff that you've done on stage or off stage, is there any particular sort of highlights?
That's a good question.
It's always a tough one.
I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed doing Little Shop of Horrors at Faldos, but I also think the first time that I appeared on Horning stage as well was quite something for me, because I didn't have any training in acting. I hadn't done anything before. And to play a part, and I even got a couple of lines as well, and I had to have an American accent, which I'd never done before. You know, that was quite something to sort of think, actually, someone's noticed me and thought, you know, he's all right. You can put him on stage and he can say a few things. I think directing and being on stage for the first time for Horning. Mm.
So would it be fair to say you're more at home with directing?
I like it all. I mean, because I'm a real lighting guy. I love lights as well. I have an unhealthy obsession with lights as well. I mean, for this show, I had to use this opportunity to buy a water effect light for this show. And then I've been able to sort of hand it off to Richard, the lighting guy, and Robin, who's doing sound, but very good with lights as well. And sort of say, oh, can you use this for me, please? Because, you know, I just really love it. And then I get to keep it at the end of the show. So, yeah, I'd say jack of all. I love being on stage. I love that attention that you get. But I also love the creativity of it all. Directing, you know, when you have that first meeting with all the sort of heads of department and that, and all these things that I've had rolling around in my head, I can just sort of get it all out there. They then take it away, put their little interpretation onto it as well, and then you sort of get to see it all come together at the end. That's really enjoyable.
And I mean, it occurs to me, obviously, you're involved in a couple of groups at least. After Little Mermaid, do you know what's next for you?
I do. It's back to pen and paper. And I'm writing another pantomime for 2025.
Oh, right. Okay. So straight back on the horse.
Straight back in. Yeah. Yeah. So the committee will be knocking on my door for that, I'm sure, very shortly. And then, yeah, sort of the Fagin group, they've got Little Mermaid coming up. They're actually doing the musical version, the version, if you like, if I can say that, if I'm allowed to say the proper version, but that. So I'll be involved. I'll be help in front of house with that. But because of the writing show-wise, I'll just be sort of taking a little step back so I can focus on the writing.
It's probably quite nice in a way to be able to just sit back and actually just enjoy other people's work occasionally, rather than being so heavily involved in things.
This is it. Yeah, it gives you a bit more time to go out and see other groups and see what they're up to as well. Because, you know, when you're writing, I'm in my room by myself, sort of writing away in that. And so it's nice to break out and sort of see some people, but you do need that concentration time so your flow doesn't get broken, as it were. You know, I often find at work, I'm sort of working away and then something pops in my head. So I have to quickly grab a post-it note, I quickly jot down the idea and that, and then I put that in my pocket. And then when I get home, I then want to sort of put it, you know, write it into script format and get it out of my head, kind of thing.
Well, you just find this disparate note that just makes absolutely no sense. You think, why on earth did I write that down?
That's it. Yeah, the wife pulling out these bits of paper from my pocket once it's been through the washing, trousers have been through the washing machine. Yeah.
Yeah. And just back to Little Mermaid, I guess you should tell us when it's on and how we can get tickets.
Yeah, sure. So I'm just going to grab the poster for this one. So it's on at Horning Village Hall from the 18th to 21st of January. Now, we're shaking up slightly as well, because this year, on Thursday and Friday, performance is at 7:30. On the Saturday, it's 5:30. And then Sunday, it's a matinee show at 2:30. Now, the tickets, I think, are outstanding value, because children are £4 and adults are £7. And for that, you also get a programme and a pre-cup of tea or cup of coffee as well.
That is good value.
Yeah, very good. You can buy tickets from Tidings Newd Agents in Lower Street, Horning, or Abbott's Estate Agents in Hofton on the Precinct. Or there is also a telephone number that you can call as well, which is Christine. So you can call Christine on 07579 786223. So yeah, you can either pop in person to Tidings or Abbott's, or you can give Christine a call and get your tickets sorted.
Presumably all that information is on the poster for the show.
It is, yes. And so, the poster is a beautiful poster this year. Really, really colourful. I don't know if I can, if it'll come off
I have seen it. Yeah. I'll do my best to share that poster around, make sure that gets seen as much as possible.
The other thing I like to say is the, you know, HATS does raise a lot of money for charity as well. I mean, last year they donated £870 to a couple of charities. This year we've got two charities again, which is Crohn's and I'm not sure I can say this word, ulcerative colitis UK, and I'm not sure.
Ulcerative colitis. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And yeah. And then also we've got the motor neurone disease for Norfolk and Waverley branch as well. So, you know, we'll be raising lots of money for them as well, which is fabulous. So not only do we put on a fab show, we also do raise some money for some charities as well. Just squeeze that in there.
Yeah, no. It's very admirable. So, and I don't mean to come across like a smart aleck knowing about ulcerative colitis, but one of my friends has it. So that's the only reason I know how to pronounce it. But yeah, good luck with, well, once you resume rehearsals, good luck with those. And so hopefully you can have a relaxing Christmas. So there we have it. That was Scott Meacock, writer and director of Hornings pantomime, The Little Mermaid. As he mentioned, it's on from the 18th to the 21st of January, and tickets are cracking value. And I'll make sure to share the poster so you can find out exactly how to get hold of tickets. Now, what else is coming up in the region over the next few weeks? Well, we'll start with Norfolk and Norwich Operatic Society and their annual show at the Norwich Theatre Royal. This time round, it's Betty Blue Eyes. Now, it's a lesser-known musical based on the Alan Bennett comedy film A Private Function. It's set in 1947, where Britain is suffering post-war depression, and the only thing the country has to look forward to is the royal wedding. Some people decide to illegally rear a pig in order to serve it at a banquet to mark the occasion, and in typical Alan Bennett style, some farcical stuff ensues. Now, I don't know the show at all, but I've been told by those involved that it's heartwarming stuff and a perfect antidote for a bleak midwinter. It's on at the Norwich Theatre Royal between the 23rd and 27th of January, and tickets can be purchased via norwichtheatre.org. Over in Cambridge, the festival players are performing a musical farce of their own called Lucky Stiff. It tells the story of shoe salesman Harry Witherspoon, who must take his long-lost Uncle Tony on the holiday of a lifetime to Monte Carlo in order to inherit his wealth. The only problem? Uncle Tony is already dead. Lucky Stiff is on at the ADC Theatre in Cambridge between the 9th and 13th of January, and tickets can be purchased via adctheatre.com. And finally, over in Suffolk, if you fancy a pantomime without the kids, the Adult Panto Company has just the thing. Cinderella, that's Cinderella with an S this time, is on at the Beccles Public Hall and Theatre from the 24th to the 27th of January, with tickets available via beccles.publichall.com. As usual, I'll post links for all the shows mentioned on my social media pages, as well as some other ones that I haven't had time to feature. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. Your support is much appreciated. And listen out for whenever the next episode is, sometime in 2024, presumably. See you on the other side. Have a great Christmas, and in the meantime, go watch some theatre. Bye.